March Madness is here. We are having a ball at the book at Route 66 Casino Hotel. All the numbers you need. First half, second half, parlays, teasers. They're all right here at the book at Route 66 Casino Hotel. A little bit of good news right now for the Mountain West. Colorado State with an 8-4 lead very early on against the Texas Longhorns, but a stunner just took place. Nevada was up in their game 56-40. They had a 16-point lead. Nevada outscores Dayton outscores Nevada 23-4 to end the game, and Dayton advances and Nevada goes home from Salt Lake City. Again, the final, Dayton 63, Nevada 60. So just add that to the list of unusual, surprisingly disappointing losses for Coach Alford during his tenure as a head coach, at Southeast Missouri State, Iowa, New Mexico, UCLA, and now at Nevada. He had a tough loss there at Iowa, where he was a 3 seed. He lost to a school out of Louisiana, I believe Northwest Louisiana State. He had that loss at New Mexico as a 3 seed, where they lost to Harvard. And today, a game in which he leads 60-46 with about 7 minutes to go. They end up losing the game 63-60. So we'll keep you updated on all the scores. But in the meantime, let's go to the top five. I want to hear about this dunk, Sam Hauser.
It's time for the Hinkle Law Office's Top 5. Hinkle Law Office is representing motorcycle riders across New Mexico since 1990. Visit HinkleLawOffices.com. Take it away, Sam Hauser.
All right, guys. Well, as we start with who's in, who's out, it's always number five, and who's in is always up first, and we're talking some more basketball because the Gatorade Boys Basketball Player of the Year announced today. Of course, Sydney Benali of Sandia announced as the Gatorade Girls Basketball Player of the Year in New Mexico, and for the second year in a row, he defends his honor. It's Volcano Vista big man Kenyon Aguino, the Player of the Year for Boys Basketball, so now a two-time Player of the Year, a three-time state champion with his senior year still ahead there for Kenyon Aguino, Volcano Vista.
Man, I'll tell you what, Scott, you got to see him 3 times in the pit last week. Aquino, I did not know he won it last year as a sophomore, too, so he's still got another year ahead of him. And when we talk about Aquino.
Yeah, Doug actually brought it up first, but we talked about it, about him winning last year.
Da-da-da.
Okay.
And we figured he was going to win again, so he did.
He did win again. And what Greg Brown did was he allowed Aquino to play more with his with facing the basket. You know, when he came up, he was more as a post guy, but now we're seeing him handle the ball, and really his entire game is really blossoming.
It allowed him to take over more games. The inside game, he was able to drive to the basket as opposed to just having him back his back to the basket.
Yeah, and so now back-to-back, and probably will be in a position to be one of the front runners to win 3 consecutive Gatorade Boys Player of the Year honors. And most important to him, he's already a 3-time state champion. The Hawks at Volcano Vista are going for number 4, and he'll be right there in the middle. What else is out there, Sammy?
All right, guys, moving on with who is in. Former Cowboys wide receiver Gallup had a visit scheduled earlier today with the Baltimore Ravens. So remember, the Ravens already signed Derrick Henry, now trying to bring in Michael Gallup, because when you're a team that falls short of accomplishing your goal of trying to win a Super Bowl, you try and get yourself better by adding more talent. And For Michael Gallup, if he can get a fresh start somewhere else, hopefully it can do him a little bit of good.
Yeah, I mean, but he's not one of these. I mean, his name is like a little bit more well-known, let's face it, Sam, because he played for the Cowboys. His numbers don't certainly jump off the page for you, but somebody that the Ravens, you know, they got Derrick Henry, as you mentioned, now going with a guy whose name is known, but are his numbers really all that impressive?
Not necessarily, but that's why I say, you know, hopefully if he can get a fresh start. The Ravens already decided that they were going to move on from Odell Beckham Jr., so needing somebody to replace that spot, and Michael Gallup could be that guy.
All right. Finally, who's out in the top five there, Sammy?
All right, yeah. Staying with college basketball, a third starter now gone portaling for San Jose State. Tim Miles, the hole getting deeper and deeper, that Tim Miles is going to have to climb himself out of this offseason. San Jose State's leading scorer, Myron Amey Jr., hitting the portal earlier today, over 15.5 points a game. So now we're up to nearly 60% of San Jose State's total scoring from this past season that Tim Miles will now have to replace.
Okay. You know, like, when you find out about guys moving on from a team that didn't have hardly any success. I think they took 10th place in the league, right? Who took last? Was it Air Force took 11th?
Yeah, and then San Jose State was 10th, yes.
So, I mean, you, like, obviously, I'm sure Coach Miles doesn't want to see guys leave, but at the same time, a team that took 10th in the Mountain West Conference, Sam, it's not like these guys are all Americans. I mean, right?
No, but and it wouldn't have been as big a story today if it was just Myron and Amey, but when he becomes the third starter, you start to kind of, I mean, at the very least, tough sledding out there. Tim Miles knew what he was getting himself into, but this is the world of college basketball. It doesn't sound, normally get the sense that there's a strong NIL presence out there in San Jose, and welcome to college basketball.
Welcome to college basketball. All right, who else is out other than 60% of the scoring for San Jose State?
Well, a lot of the defensive production and maybe the most menacing person in the entire NFL. We got the news a few days ago now that Aaron Donald announced his retirement, the all-pro, all-everything interior defensive lineman for the LA Rams. But in a recent interview, Aaron Donald opening up about his decision to retire, and I have even more respect for him now than I did even a few days ago.
10 Pro Bowls, 8 All-Pros, 3 Defensive Player of the Years.
And Rookie Defensive Player of the Year.
Rookie of the Year, 2 NFC Championships, 3 NFC West Championships. Went to 2 Super Bowls, won one, lost one. I'm complete. I'm full. I think the passion to play the game is no longer there for me. I will always love football, but to think about going through another camp and another 17 season, I just don't got the urge to want to push myself to do that no more. I'm burned out, you know. If anything, the best way to say that, I'm full, I'm complete. I'm satisfied with what I was able to do in 10 years, and I think it's time for me to, at 32 years old, to retire from football and, you know, jump into the next step of my career and my life.
So, obviously, Sam, you said you had more respect for him now. Enlighten me.
I mean, just because there's, for every Aaron Donald, there's an infinite amount of players who can't kind of have that presence of, you know, that forethought to understand. Like Aaron Donald saying there, I did everything, there's nothing left for me to do, my career is complete. I mean, every one of these guys who were at that level, the top players in the sport, they never want to quit until the game tells them you can't do this anymore. So, I mean, now, we'll always remember, the last memory that we'll have of Aaron Donald, the football player, is a guy who was on top of the sport. Now, there's going to be people that say, you know, would like to see him play a little bit more, but to remember Aaron Donald that way, as opposed to some of these other guys who just couldn't give it up, and then the last thing you remember of them on the field is an older, broken-down version of themselves.
No, you're right, and we used to see that a lot more before they made the kind of money they do now. I mean, it was sad to even see like Emmitt Smith in his last days. You think of other players, you know, including like the Joe Namaths and the O.J. Simpsons of the world that you know,
But I mean, even go to like to Peyton Manning even more recently.
Yeah, but didn't he win a Super Bowl in his very last season?
He did, but you know, you look at his touchdown to interception ratio that year, and they won. It makes it even more impressive that they won that year.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of continued to play because he had a yearning for a Super Bowl. Aaron Donald had that Super Bowl. But the point is that he was the one that made the decision, you know, when it was time to leave, and he didn't let the game make that decision for him. All right, who else is out, Sam?
And also Aaron Donald doing just fine, roughly $150 million in career salary earnings, not before, you know, everything that gets taken out and all the other life expenses, but roughly $150 million made on the football field there for Aaron Donald. Back to basketball. Boston Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla, the coach of the team that is running away with the Eastern Conference, that is doing laps around the rest of the Eastern Conference, Joe Mazzulla of the Celtics being told to stop one of his antics by an unspecified person in the NBA league office. Joe Mazzulla making headlines in NBA circles last week during a home game with the Phoenix Suns late in the fourth quarter. Celtics are up 18. There's about 3 minutes to go. Joe Mazzulla calls timeout, and you know, a lot of times when a coach calls timeout, somebody will just take a couple of dribbles and maybe throw one up just for the sake of getting a shot up. It's innocuous. It's no big deal. Well, this is the coach. This is the head coach of this team. This grown man calls a timeout. Royce O'Neal of the Suns is just putting up an innocuous shot, and Joe Mazzulla jumps out in front of him like he's trying to contend a three with the game on the line.
So what is the method to this madness then with all these timeouts?
Well, the NBA is telling him, don't jump in front of players anymore. If you call timeout, worry about your own team. I mean, that's absurd for a coach to do something like that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that would be something that maybe Popovich or something might do because his team is having a terrible season. You're making the point that Boston right now, best record in the entire NBA, if I am correct on that, Sam.
Yeah, and even if Pop did it, there would still be an eyebrow raise, although we'd probably find a little bit more humor in it because he'd make some, you know, some snide, sarcastic comment about it afterwards about, you know, hey, I still got that jump in me. But I've never seen anything like this before Joe Mazzulla pulled this. So the NBA said, please don't do that anymore.
All right, please go to number four there, Sammy. Cool.
Gladly. The Dodgers lose a wild one in Seoul, South Korea. Again, it was a 4 a.m. Mountain Time first pitch this morning, and you miss plenty of runs to go around. 15-11, the Padres get the win over the Dodgers in the second and final game of the Seoul series out there in South Korea. Even though the Dodgers lost, though, no one had a bigger day than Mookie Betts. 4-for-5, 6 RBI, a moonshot home run, a fist bump from Ken Griffey Jr., and a new free car as part of Major League Baseball's sponsorship deal with Hyundai. First player to hit a home run in the series wins a car, and it happens to be Mookie Betts earlier today in the fifth inning.
Yeah, I wonder what the altitude is there. They scored some runs in those first two games. And, you know, Betts, we remember him as a right fielder. We know he was going to get more time at second base. But, you know, they had him at shortstop. What an offensive game for a shortstop that Mookie Betts had. So the Dodgers come back to the States. They'll continue their spring training. But they'll start when everybody else starts with a 1-1 regular season record, as will the San Diego Padres.
That is correct. Right. By the way, Seoul, South Korea, basically at sea level.
Okay. Well, the balls were flying, man. Maybe they were using those juiced up balls to get a lot of interest in these first two games. I'm just saying.
I hear you. Shohei Ohtani, 1-for-5 with a sac fly RBI. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, his first outing for the Dodgers. Didn't get past the first inning. He got roughed up, and in his defense, every pitcher in this game pretty much got roughed up. And now the Dodgers come back for one more spring series with the Angels starting Sunday. We'll have Sunday's game for you here on ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team. And then opening day, I believe a week from today, opening day for the Dodgers against the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, two storied baseball clubs there. All right, what's number three there, Sammy?
All right, so this one is related to the story that you teased before the break there, Joe, about Anthony Edwards no longer having the number one dunk of the week, although this is not a dunk highlight. So still weird to say this, but Saquon Barkley, now the Philadelphia Eagles running back, Saquon Barkley, told a story this week about his daughter roasting the New York Giants over an open fire when she found out that her dad was signing with a division rival.
My daughter, funny story with her, she knows there's a lot of history in my career with the Eagles. I remember one time when I was with the Giants and we lost to Philly in the playoffs. We went to a diner to get some breakfast and there was a bird. And she was like, "Daddy, oh no, oh no." And I'm like, "What is it?" She points to the bird and she was like, "It's the Eagles, it's the Eagles." And me and Anna, you know, we just started laughing. I just put my head down. I just kind of start shaking. So when I told her that we're going to be going to Philly, she kind of was just like, "Does that mean we're going to win now?" And I just started smiling again. And I was like, hopefully we will.
Are we going to win some games now?
I spell fun, W-I-N.
So maybe she doesn't know everything there is to know about football, but she's old enough to know the Eagles have been much more successful lately than the Giants. Is that the story of the day there, Sam?
Yes, and if we ever were to bring back the game show Kids Say the Darndest Things, we'll have to get Saquon Barkley's daughter on that show.
What's number three there, Sam? Or number two, Sammy?
Yep, back to postseason basketball going on here. We'll start last night in the NIT because UNLV is in the NIT. They didn't make the NCAA tournament, but they're in the NIT, and the Running Rebels getting a road victory in the first round. UNLV wins 84-77 at Princeton. So you put up 84 points against an Ivy League school in the first place. You do it on the road. You do it without Caleb Boone. That was one of the best showings we've seen from Coach Kevin Kruger and UNLV all season. With all those elements at play, no Caleb Boone, playing Princeton, you never know what's going to happen. And 84 points in the W for UNLV.
Yeah, I mean, that has gotten some attention with that UNLV Rebel fan base. Princeton was a number one seed in the NIT for a reason. An incredible regular season, got beat by Yale in the conference tournament. That's why Yale went and Princeton didn't. But Princeton playing at home there in New Jersey, UNLV after an overtime loss to San Diego State, people wondered how excited they would be to play in the NIT. Kevin Kruger and a couple of the players said, "We're ready to keep playing." And that was proof of that last night. That many points against a team like Princeton. I mean, typically UNLV was in the mid-60s, early, you know, low 70s in their last month or so of the season. And they just go off. And Dedon Thomas, the co-freshman player of the year, along with JT Toppin, he's been the guy they've been leaning on, and he didn't even do anything for them offensively. They relied on other guys, Sam.
Yeah, it was the Rob Whaley game, kind of flying under the radar in the back half of the Mountain West regular season schedule, but Rob Whaley, 21 points, 8 of 8 shooting. He was a rebound shy of a double-double. He had 18 points from Keelan Boone. Again, if they had scored 84 points with Caleb Boone out there, it would have been enough of an attention grabber. But 84 without Caleb Boone. So now UNLV going to come back home and host the second round of the NIT at the Thomas and Mack. That'll be Sunday night against Boston College there in Vegas.
BC, you know, speaking of BC, they were the team that rocked Clemson,
right,
the mobile opponent, in the Atlantic Coast Conference Tournament there, ended the season for Clemson. And UNLV, again, I'll tell you, you know, there's a lot of similarities, you know, between what Air Force does and what Princeton does. So, obviously, UNLV learned their lesson when Air Force beat them there in Vegas by 32, because they went up and crushed them at Colorado Springs. They crushed Air Force, another similar style in Princeton. They crush him there. So any concern for Kevin Kruger and his future at UNLV, which was being discussed there in mid-January, Sam, I think he's gained a lot of respect and maybe even some optimism up there in Utah.
Yeah, it was right around that time that his team started getting hot. And, of course, that was the story going into the Mountain West Tournament. UNLV, maybe the hottest team coming in. They have to get San Diego State without Caleb Boone in that one, and it ends up being one and done there. But on to the second round and hosting now in the NIT. To the big NCAA tournament, round of 64 started this morning with what seemed like it should have been a really entertaining 8-9 matchup with Mississippi State and Michigan State. But Tom Izzo and company rolling that one 69-51. So how about this, guys? With the win now, Michigan State 11-1 against SEC teams in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Give me that again. Give me that again one more time.
Michigan State with the win today over Mississippi State. Sparty all-time 11-1 against SEC teams in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that is domination is all that is, Sam. Yeah, I mean, like we were talking to Kevin early, the big money here at the book at Route 66 Casino Hotel, more than anybody else, more than Arizona, more than North Carolina, it was all on Mississippi State, Chris Jans, Mississippi State, SEC, but they forgot they were playing against Tom Izzo there, Sam. Incredible numbers there for Izzo. What else is going on in the basketball there, Sam, in the big tournament?
Yeah, so we'll run through the scores, the finals of the games that are already done from earlier today. We'll give you an update on Mountain West action going on here as we speak as Colorado State crashing right back down to earth, kind of looking a little bit like they did the other night against Virginia. But Wagner, the 16th seed, they got their first NCAA tournament win in program history in the play-in round. They go take on North Carolina. Tar Heels cruising that one, 90-62, 20 points, 15 boards for Armando Bacot, who's been there forever. North Carolina moves on. I'm going to skip Arizona and Long Beach State because there's a separate story about that one that I want to come back to here in a second, but the Creighton Blue Jays, number 3, no problem, 17-point win over the Zips of Akron. Illinois, a 3 seed, also taking on a 14. The Illini, big, big winners in that one by 16 over Morehead State. One of the early surprises today, at least just based on seeding, BYU gained so many good graces with what they did in their first year in the Big 12. Well, they get smacked in the face and lose 71-67 to Duquesne. Moving on to the second round, those boys there from Duquesne. Oregon, one of the hottest teams in college basketball here over the last few weeks. 14-point win over South Carolina, so a couple wins for 11s over 6s. Good omen potentially for tomorrow. Just finishing up a little while ago, Dayton, a 63-60 win over Nevada, guys. And with just over 7 minutes to go in regulation time in this one, according to the ESPN win probability tracker, with just over 7 minutes to go in this one, Nevada had a 99.5% win probability and found a way to let that one slip away. And Steve Alford, that financial unit, whatever that dollar amount would have been from Nevada winning, Steve Alford better be paying that out of his own pocket.
Man, I'm telling you, go through history. He's had some missteps in the tournament, and that today's has got to hurt as much as any. They're up there 60-40 or 56-40, and you said the probability was 99% plus.
99.5.
Dayton goes on that 16-0 run, ends up winning the game by 3. The other Mountain West game that is going on right now, Colorado State jumped out 8-2. Now they trail 20-11 against Texas out of the Big 12.
Yep.
All right, any other scores of notes before we move on, Sam?
Double-digit minute scoring drought here and counting for Colorado State after they got out to that early lead. Well, I said I wanted to come back to one of these games here at the end. You had the 2:15 matchup earlier today with one of the darlings of the tournament that everybody wanted to see if they could move on. But the number 2 seed Arizona, Tommy Lloyd and company, handle Long Beach State, a 20-point win for Arizona. But of course, the story was just Long Beach State getting to the NCAA tournament after the school decided they weren't going to bring back head coach Dan Monson. They let him finish out the season. He goes on and wins the Big West, wins the conference tournament. And earlier today, the athletic director there at Long Beach State, guys, having a look at me, Louie moment, putting the spotlight on himself, taking the credit for this one. Long Beach State athletic director Bobby Smitherin, earlier today, talking about the decision to move on from Dan Monson, said the timing of the decision was a factor because he hoped it would fuel a postseason run for the team.
So all of this was premeditated. He was like, hey, it's nothing awkward for me to have fired a coach that was getting ready to play an NCAA tournament game. He said there was some a method behind the madness of firing Monson early there, that it would light a fire. And if that's true, it worked. But a lot of people are wondering if he should have just stayed out of it. And that's the point you're trying to make.
Well, and
right,
also,
Sam?
I mean, you don't need to be taking credit for the decision that you decided to fire somebody.
All right. Anything else before we hit number one? Because number one's got plenty to it.
Yeah, well, just quickly, just to remind everybody, just after 1 o'clock tomorrow on True TV, Lobos in their game against Clemson. Coach Richard Pitino in his third NCAA tournament, first one since 2019. Lobos back in the big dance for the first time since 2014. But yeah, this number one story's got a lot of layers to it that we're going to try to peel through here.
All right, well, see, and I just sent it to you. You got to look at that. When we were out in Vegas last week for the Mountain West, we had heard some representatives from the conference mention that, like, I'll tell you, the Mountain West is trying to, like, own the West. They're calling the Mountain West the best of the West.
Oh, there we go.
They had the numbers this season to back it up. Well, they took it a step further, okay? They went and bought signage there in Times Square, right there in the midst of all the March Madness. They're bragging, the Mountain West is bragging about what a successful season their basketball, men's basketball teams had. And you've got a picture of it, man. We need to tweet that out exactly, Sam. But there's a photo of the Lobo logo in Times Square, and the Mountain West stepping up a little bit. All right, what is number one, Sammy?
Well, story that came out yesterday afternoon but needed some time to kind of get more details and really digest this. A lot of twists and turns and layers to this one, but the Dodgers making the decision yesterday to fire Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter and also reported as his longtime friend as well, Ipe Metsuhara, Shohei's interpreter. And I'm going to let ESPN MLB insider Jeff Passan kind of take us through all the paths that this story has been going down over the last 24 hours. This was Jeff Passan earlier today on the Pat McAfee Show.
There's so much, Pat, in this story that we don't know right now and that we can't explain. But at that particular point, Shohei Ohtani knew that there was gambling involved with Ipe Metsuhara, his interpreter. At that point, the story that had been told to Tisha Thompson, our reporter at ESPN, was that Ipe Metsuhara had gambled on international soccer, the NFL, college football, NBA, not baseball, all the other
sports. That's huge. That's big news.
It's an important part of the story, certainly, because, you know, it is different than Pete Rose. It is different than the Black Sox scandal. So at that point, he knew that there was gambling that had gone on. You can go into the clubhouse, in fact, after the game, And Dodgers players were sitting down, and a group of people, front office people for the organization got up and said, hey, there's going to be a story coming out about gambling. Ipe, would you like to say something? And he was just extremely apologetic. Then they left and went back to the hotel. And at some point there, it seems that is where the story changed. Because the expectation was that, you know, this was going to be running this story based on what Ipe Mitsuhara had said to Tisha Thompson, our reporter, on Tuesday. Then Wednesday, suddenly, Ohtani's people come back and say, wait. We disavow the information that was given to you in an interview that we helped set up. Instead, this is our statement, and the statement was that there is a massive theft of money that has gone on. We have documents that show $4.5 million in wire transfers out of a bank account to the alleged illegal bookmaker. Now, what happened during that time, we do not know yet. And why this story changed so quickly, was there information that was found out? And if so, what was that information? Or did something with the original story suddenly not jive anymore?
So again, just to kind of sum this up here, the place that you start with this is sports betting is still illegal in the state of California, guys. And Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mitsuhara, got involved with an illegal bookmaker who was found out by federal investigators getting involved in that. They find the ties with him, with Shohei Ohtani, and the original story was that Shohei Ohtani was using this money to cover his losses. Then we come to find out later on that the story is changing to that Shohei Ohtani's representative saying that this money was stolen by the interpreter.
Yeah, I mean, talk about messing up a heck of a job. I mean, Ipe is the interpreter for Shohei, and he's got a lot of airtime. We could all picture him because we've seen him so often, and what a mess. And one of those things that I'm sure when the Dodgers are in Korea, that they're like, you know, what is going on back there in the state? What a mess there, Sam. All right, that'll be the top five. Nice job on that, Sammy.
That's tonight's Hinkle Law Office's Top 5. Hinkle Law Office is representing motorcycle riders across New Mexico since 1990. Visit HinkleLawOffices.com.
All right, a quick update. We talked about Virginia setting a record for the lowest points scored in the first half the other night against Colorado State. Well, Colorado State right now, with a minute to go in the first half, is losing 22-11. So they are in danger of breaking that record for lowest points in the first half as they finish out the first half. All right, when we come back, we're going to go, you know, through the first four seeds. We're going to bring Scott Galletti into the mix, and we're going to figure out who is under the most pressure here as they go into this year's March Madness. We'll do that when we come back. We're here live at The Book at Route 66 Casino Hotel, ESPN Radio 101.7 The Team.